it's inevitable.
But we don't think it's inevitable. We think it can be stopped.
Mr. Petey Pete, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 and WGXC.org, streaming all over the world.
I'm Ralph.
And I'm Bill.
We're the tech guys.
Not the car guys.
But if you love car talk and use a computer.
Or the internet.
Or Zoom.
And you have glitches, grief, hassles.
Or maybe you just have a stupid question.
We're the wise guys with answers.
Sometimes stupid answers, but...
Monday nights, 7 p.m. WGXC.
Tech Talk. 518-697-7400. Tech Talk. Tune in.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518- 622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
FM, if you would like to contribute to the conversation, have your voice heard, have your questions answered, call 518-622-2598 or 518-697-7400. You are live and on the air with Ralph and Bill. Hello, Ralph. How are you?
Hello, Bill. And even more important than contributing to the conversation, if our myriad of listeners would like to contribute to WGXC itself, they can go to wavefarm.org. WGXC.org on the internet, and somewhere in there, there must be a way for them to contribute some shekels to keep this marvelous cultural treasure on the airwaves. So, Bill, what was this that I read this week, that if you fall into a black hole, you personally, if Bill Collier falls into a black hole, he will come out the other side. I thought that was antithetical to the nature of a black hole. What have you been up to?
Well, I have come out the other side, and I've come out the other side with some startling news. First, I want to congratulate Barack Obama and Ted Cruz on their new engagement, because obviously the two have crawled in bed together and both agree that the platforms should be regulated as publishers. Barack Obama said that the idea that the platforms were more like the phone company and not like the Atlantic opinion magazine is untenable, and that they should be treated as publishers under the law, which is something that I have a feeling, though, that Ted Cruz and Barack Obama have very different motivations for their respective positions. But there you go. If I was the tech industry, I would be surely shaking in my boots, because if those two can agree, that they both don't like the tech industry.
They both want to absolutely destroy social media. So I
So why not? And why not?
Why I mean, not?
What they're doing to my beloved TikTok, and I have it up those, there too.
Yeah, I mean, why should those 2 billion people who like? Oh, all right, TikTok.
That is our new TikTok bump music. TikTok right. is awesome, and we're going to talk more about it.
Why should those hundreds of millions of people?
I want to finish with the absolute sweet meteor of death that is about to hit the social media if Mr. Obama and Mr. Cruz have their collective way.
They're not going to have their collective way, Bill, because nobody really wants to crush the fun of the 2 billion people, of whom hundreds of millions are in the United States, who play on Facebook, or the hundreds of millions who play on TikTok. Now, if Barack Obama and Ted Cruz conspired to shut down Donald Trump's Twitter feed, we should all send them a box of chocolates, a bouquet of flowers.
I disagree.
And a scented thank you note.
You're taking my entertainment away from me. Have you always been such a Debbie Downer?
Well, in this case, I'm trying to protect America from the weird, unhinged tweets of the outgoing president of the United States.
From weird, unhinged tweets, you simply enjoy them.
You simply enjoy them when you're not actually issuing them. So well, I understand why you're a little sensitive.
I do not make any kind of unsavory tweets of any kind. My tweet discipline is impeccable.
That's because you never tweet.
Well, maybe that's it.
But maybe I do remember you ending up in Facebook jail more than once.
I have not ended up in Facebook jail in almost a year.
Yes.
Because I have been a good little boy.
You've learned your lesson.
I have learned my lesson. I stopped posting pictures of you scantily clad, which evidently
that's scary.
It is scary. So while we're waiting for our first caller, I just have to, are you ready? Ready, engineer? Let's hit it with the music. It's TikTok.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So TikTok has been given yet another lease on life. On the 13th, their whole thing was supposed to expire. Mr. Barr, for some reason, did not enforce the edict and start to shut the platform down. TikTok came to the Trump administration and said, please, master, can I have 30 days more? Well, the government said, okay, fine, we'll give you 15 more days. 15, damn it, this is the end of it, damn it. So they have 15 more days until the 28th of November, allegedly, because our government is very concerned about the privacy of users of platforms. They are really concerned about that.
Really concerned.
They're on the ball right there. As soon as they make them all publishers.
You can't be a publisher with 2 billion contributors. It is physically impossible. Barack Obama and Ted Cruz have no idea about the implications of what they're talking here. They are simply being little hooligans who, and by the way, I like Barack Obama, but he's way out of his depth here, and he should stick to bringing, you know, peace and enlightenment and social justice to the world, and keep his sticky little fingers outside of things that about which he knows nothing.
I don't know what to say about that, except that I would love to have been there when obviously him and Ted Cruz had their little soiree to align their views so closely with one another.
I bet they have never actually had a soiree. Not even a morning A. They're just prattling on in ways that are designed. It's just a publicity stunt. But that said, Bill, I've worked in the government. I've worked in the White House. I've worked intimately with the Congress. I've worked in and with executive branch agencies. And let me get you woke about something. The federal government is superb about providing over-engineered non-solutions to non-problems. And you can be quite confident, if not quite certain, but you'd be quite, because occasionally they do really crush us in the private sector with truly stupid ideas. But you can be reasonably confident that they will come up with some flamboyant, over-engineered non-solution to this non-problem, knowing that your average rank-and-file voters, like you, will be fooled into thinking they've done something good.
Hey, no personal insults. That's fine.
Okay. You're not a rank-and-file voter. So hopefully we do have some rank-and-file voters out there who want to call in at 518-622-2598 and ask Tech Talk for answers to their consumer electronic technology hassles in their cell phones, even Androids, which technically represent cell phones, their laptops, their iPods, their iPads, and their apps. So,
and don't forget the Kindle Fire, which I just got one, and I just unboxed it yesterday,
and
I am now being spied upon by that Amazon robot lady,
Alexa.
And
she's not spying on you; she's stalking you. Give her a break.
Ah, yes. There was a movie in the 80s where the AI computer on the spaceship fell madly in love with one of the people, one of the guys, and actually replicated itself as a female, I think.
We're talking about your parents here, Bill, so show some respect.
Yeah, I'm saying Dora does not share, so Alexa will probably get defenestrated.
Okay, well, luckily you live on the first floor, so she doesn't have far to fall.
Well, actually, no, my I'm on a hill, so if I throw her over the porch, she'll actually fall at least 15 feet onto the ground. So I'm going to go back to the TikTok thing, and to the social media thing on two
fronts. Wait, we need the music.
We have an innocent victim. It looks like Adam.
A caller?
Is it L.A. or Louisiana? I can't see. Oh. Ooh, this is a cool name. Alina. Ah, nice name. Hello, Alina.
Wow. Awesome. Hey, Alina. Hello, Alina. Do you have a question? Are we here to play Stump the Collier with a really hard question? Neither does Bill. So let me pipe in here because I actually do. I was the senior counselor to the Trade Association for the blockchain industry for 2 years. And I've written a book on the subject called Redefining the Future of the Economy. So here's the thing. There is a blockchain company called Votes. I believe it's called VOTEZ that is attempting to persuade people to register their votes on a blockchain. It's been not very successful. There have been a number of criticisms of it. My own view is that this is an over-engineered problem. A blockchain really is simply a way of taking a pot of data, encrypting it, and then storing it on thousands of PCs so that nobody can tamper with the data. And so by distributing it over literally thousands of personal computers,
you are creating an immutable record by a vast amount of redundancy. That not only takes a lot of energy. Right now, the blockchain uses about as much energy. Blockchain over the world uses about as much energy. Last time I looked, as either Ireland or Switzerland, but it's not. But it's just very, very cumbersome. So there are some things that the blockchain will be good for. I'm also the co-founder of a stablecoin blockchain enterprise that should be launching this month. But the idea of using it to vote is probably a severely unnecessary situation. You could simply use a relational database if you wanted to store your voting records on software. But beyond that, the fact is that we had a complicated process this year because of the pandemic. But there is no reason in principle that people couldn't simply go to a website and vote and have their vote recorded on the website in a highly secure, encrypted way that would require far less heavy lifting than the blockchain. So people who are pushing the blockchain as a solution to a voting problem, we don't really have a voting problem. And if we do, they're a lot easier, more elegant, and more economical solutions than using blockchain. Alina, does that answer your question, or did I just dodge it?
Put your brain in touch.
I heard you say entrepreneur, but I didn't hear.
I'm a technology entrepreneur out here in California, and I'm an inventor. Okay,
yes.
So I've invented some apps and some different things that are answering some of the problems that we've been having, lately, with tech, as far as dividing the nation and et cetera, and all the different things that we already kind of know about. But could you repeat your name one more time, please? I'm going to write it on a piece of paper.
My name is Ralph Benko, R-A-L-P-H.
Oh, this is Ralph. Okay, hi, Ralph. I didn't know who I was talking to.
Hi, Alina. And the other one,
Ralph.
The not-so-good-looking one, the one with the face for radio, is William R. Collier, or as we say in France, Collier Jr., the CEO of Regal Blue Media and the president of the Capitalist League.
Okay, president of Capitalist Group. Oh, I like that. Okay.
And co-author of the Capitalist Manifesto. So
Oh, okay, very good. All right, good. All right, so we're going to have a conversation later, hopefully, because I've developed some things, and I would love your thoughts on all of this, because, you know, blockchain kind of has a lot of hype around it, but when you really get, you know, down to it and you know what it is, it doesn't even necessarily apply to everything, you know, so... Yeah.
There are some things that it's going to be extraordinarily valuable for, and some things that it's not. It's the blockchain, starting with Bitcoin, is now over 11 years old, and it, even for all of the hype, there's a whole thing called the Gartner hype cycle, all the excitement that it's generated, and so far it hasn't paid off. I believe that once it gets embellished with AIs and with consensus layered algorithms, and with the proper formulas from combinatorial mathematics, it could indeed become a multi-trillion-dollar breakthrough. And we're trying to help. My co-author, Dawn Talbot, and I are trying to help it do that. But mm-hmm. it hasn't had the breakthrough yet. On the other hand, we've just gotten to work. So stay tuned, Alina Demeter. And
that's beautiful, and I will. I'm part of a blockchain and booze over here with Alon Gorin, who runs the LA Blockchain Summit, and I'm kind of in the blockchain group of guys over here on the West Coast. So we sit around.
If I can chime in briefly, I am not as immersed in blockchain. I've studied it somewhat, but I'm not obviously like Ralph. But I'm of the opinion, and Ralph may think I'm wrong, but I'm of the opinion that with tweaks and advances in how the technology is used, I don't see theoretically why blockchain couldn't allow for some sort of a virtual voting system. I don't know if it's ready for the prime time of national U.S. elections per se, but I think that development towards allowing blockchain, because one of the things I love about the blockchain concept is this idea of creating this unique ID that's just your ID, that is really difficult for other people to fake. So that if you actually vote or do some activity, buy something, it's your ID that did it, and nobody can fake that. It's really what's impossible to really fake it. So I think just on that principle, my mind is thinking, well, great, then you can't really fake votes because you have a system that's based on the blockchain. You can't go in and arbitrarily change votes or do anything like that. So that's my theory about it. And I think if you look at the country of Estonia and what they're doing with the blockchain, if you start to see them use blockchain-based voting, that would be really interesting.
Estonia, huh? They're ahead of the game. Well, that's not surprising.
My goodness, yes.
No.
Alina, don't listen to Bill.
Listen to Bill.
he sounds very, very knowledgeable.
You're going to be Siskel and Ebert of the blockchain world. You know, I've been invited to become the blockchain blondie and have a little show about this. You know, because I kind of be the Diane Sawyer, the piece.
You don't need to copy your voting record onto 10,000 different personal computers in order to secure the identity. You could, just like you've got a Google Authenticator on your iPhone, there are ways to set up identity authentication.
Hold on, I didn't suggest that, by the way, Ralph. I never suggested that. I don't know where
I'm just talking about things that I've seen in the news because, all this stuff is kind of bubbling up and everybody's getting whipped up into a frenzy because of just people don't trust the news anymore. And then so the gossip starts and then, people get it up in a frenzy and, all this kind of stuff. So this is why I think there's a huge, huge need now to kind of create a way to authenticate third-party authentication that is not biased, that can be shown that is not biased, things that are important, like voting and like money and these things that we our lives depend on, right?
Alina Demeter, you are absolutely right. Bill is absolutely wrong. The blockchain is not the way to achieve authentication of voting. That is
obviously, because why do we need to copy things? He's exactly right. It's a distributed network. In other words, it's not a way. It is not the most efficient way to do it. There are other ways.
That's exactly right. It is a way.
In other words, computational standpoint.
It is an expensive and inefficient way of doing it. Bill Collier. That's all.
Listen to Bill, but about other things. I'm not a blockchain expert yet.
I have one more question, and this is about Section 230. I just read about this, and it was apparently there's some kind of movement that is bipartisan to somehow overhaul the internet. I didn't really understand what that means, and I'm going to give it to you. And I'm kind of wondering what is that all? What are they doing? What's going on?
Well, look, the tip off here, Alina, and then I'll turn it over to Bill because he's got opinions about everything. But the truth, if you want to know the truth, I've worked in politics at the highest level.
I don't want to know the truth. None of us want to know the truth.
For 35 years. And whenever you hear the word bipartisan, that is code for a collusion by the Republicans and the Democrats to loot the taxpayers. So if you ever hear anybody say bipartisan, you know that bad things are afoot. So holster your shooting iron.
Ralph knows a few things about me. I'm already a suspicious part. Ralph can talk about me later. He'll know why I'm very suspicious.
Even a blind pig finds a truffle once in a while. But I believe that this actually...
blind pig finds a truffle. Oh, that's good. Okay, go ahead.
We talked about this earlier, actually. I think a hint of it, Ralph, was when I was reading what Obama was saying about platforms are publishers and they're not really platforms, which I found it odd that him and Ted Cruz were reading from the same songbook. And so Rule 230, that is about, it protects the platforms from being sued like you would sue a publisher.
Right.
And if they got rid of that, then Facebook would have to moderate it's 500 and some million people.
Right. That's the thing.
If their content was, whatever, the oh, you libeled somebody, you smeared somebody.
And then the Facebook
would
be
a nightmare.
Liable on the chain of liability. I'm also an attorney, by the way, so yeah, I understand.
My condolences.
No, I'm not actually getting out of it, but you know, I mean, I was trained as an attorney, and so. But I understand lawsuits, but I'm just thinking, okay, so fine. So now what are they proposing? Because I read this morning in the news, or yesterday morning in the news, that each one of the you know, the current president, which is still Donald Trump, I think, although I'm not sure, we can have an argument about that too, but Donald Trump and Joe Biden are each for different reasons wanting to challenge this Rule 230 to kind of put a clamp somehow on the internet. Is there somewhere I can go to, or we can go to find more detailed information?
Yes, Alita, Senator, there is. There's a website called, this is really insidery stuff, so I hope you've got a piece of paper and a pencil there. There's a website called google.com, google.com.
Yes, thank you.
You can type, I know. You can go to google.com.
My ex-husband, who was an IT guy, would tell me when he wanted to talk. Go Google
it. Bring you to very reliable answers, at least until Barack Obama and Ted Cruz managed to crush the search engines as well as social media, which they're clearly trying to do.
Well, I hope you thank you very much. So, in other words, this is still just kind of whatever, up in the air, you know.
Yes.
Nothing
this
serious.
This is just idle chatter and a publicity stunt by a former president and a senator, a U.S. senator from Texas, who is widely viewed as the Eddie Haskell of politics. Hello, Mr. Cleaver. Hello, Mrs. Cleaver. Can Wallace come out and play? And you know he's up to something sneaky.
Are you talking about Ted Cruz?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Okay. You know, Ralph can tell you later why I didn't really get into politics until recently. He can tell you later privately.
Alina, we have other callers.
He knows a little about me and why I ask all these questions. It's interesting. Okay. Interesting.
Okay, we have other callers trying to get in, so run it. So you've been
thank you very much. Thank
call
you, gentlemen.
Us back next week.
Let's be in touch, and I'll continue to call and ask questions if you don't mind.
We would like to encourage that.
Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Okay, next Monday. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, we now have Michael from Portland, Maine. I think it's Portland, Maine. Or Portland, Maine.
Yeah, Portland, Maine.
Welcome, Michael from Portland,
Maine. Can you hear
me?
Thank you. I'm in South Portland right now, but... you know, South Portland.
Isn't like South Portland just across Main Street? Like it's like two houses or something in Maine or something?
It's the more residential part of the city. I'm picking up Chinese food from a really good place there, though. I won't drop the name, though. I don't want people to think it's an advertisement. But
hold on, Michael.
Question,
do you live in
a leafy
neighborhood?
Combination tech and politics question. So large social media companies recently seem to always be getting in trouble for, you know, grossly misusing user data, or there was even a story, I won't name names, but about one big social media company doing psychological experiments on their users. This is not a conspiracy theory. You can Google this.
You mean Facebook?
But then they have the what?
You mean Facebook?
Well, I didn't say that, but it was large social
that.
Media company.
No,
it,
there was an article about it. Facebook,
on their users.
They
you have them get called in. You know, like I won't name names. Let's just say Jim is the imaginary company name. These are the large, the big ones, you know, the big five. And they, Congress, to speak before Congress, and Congress is like wagging their finger at them, being like, Jim, don't set the dog's tail on fire again. And then we get the, I'm so sorry. But during those times, you have Congress asking these insane questions like, you know, do you put, how do I get cookies off my browser? You know, like, I'm waiting for Ted Cruz to ask how to update iOS, but what is it really going to take to get some sensible regulation on these companies where they're not allowed to just completely get behind the wheel and take us on whatever scary joyride they're on, but some really good regulation that's also not going to completely stop them from being able to be competitive in the global market? Like, is it going to be a new class of congressmen and congresswomen who come in who know better? Because I'm sort of tired of watching these meetings, and the Congress people are often asking, you know, like, do you use cookies on your browser? And so-and-so gets to say, oh, yeah, we use cookies so that we can log you back in. But, you know, completely just running circles around these legislators, which is really kind of sad. So the simple question is, what's it going to take to have meaningful, effective regulation? Because right now we're in the 40s when people are like, is smoking really bad for you? I'm not sure. I think that's where we are with some tech companies right now.
That's a great question. Let's see if Bill wants to pretend he has. I actually know the answer, but let's see if Bill wants to.
No, actually, I want you to answer it because I already know that you know the answer.
Okay.
I think this is a good one for you, Ralph.
Yeah, I'd say 30 years ago, there was this maniac named Newt Gingrich who became the Speaker of the House of Representatives by campaigning against the House of Representatives. And he actually managed to boost the Republicans into a majority in the House. And he did, after he became the Nancy Pelosi of his day, he did a whole lot of institutional damage that the country is still suffering from. This is a true fact. I lived through it. One of the things he did was he told all of the members of the Republican conference that once they got elected, instead of moving to Washington, they should stay living in the district and fly into Washington for about 3 days a week to vote. And by virtue of the fact that they did not bring their families and did not establish a residence in Washington, it completely shredded the social connectivity of the Congress of the United States, whereby all these congressmen used to have their wives and their kids, and they would socialize with each other, Republicans and Democrats, so they could actually develop friendships and develop trust over time when it was earned, that really would allow them to pass effective, smart legislation. Everything wasn't partisan, and everything wasn't weaponized. The other thing that Newt did was...
This is resonating with me a lot. Because when you pull people apart and you just have them, they just see each other at work, you get to polarizing situations inside and outside of politics.
Right. And so that's one of the things that is missing. And nobody even discusses it, so I'm not optimistic that they're going to fix it. But it's very fixable. It was a protocol change, a changing custom. It wasn't a change in a law or a rule or a regulation. And that could be changed overnight by a new speaker. The other thing that Newt did that was enormously damaging to the quality of the legislation that we see is that he cut the congressional staff, the committee staff. Because when we're talking about technology, we're talking about things that require a lot of education, requires a lot of technical expertise to know what you're dealing with. Most congressmen don't even know what the internet is, transmission control protocol, internet protocol. They don't understand about servers or routers. They don't know how the thing is put together. They don't know how it works. They're clueless, as you can tell from any hearing. And for them to want it to be monkeying around fixing something they don't understand, they would at minimum need a really good, high quality technical staff of the House Commerce Committee, having a couple of dozen, maybe a couple hundred, we're dealing with a very important technology here, specialists who they can trust because they work for them, and who actually understand the mechanics here, who can actually then turn around and feed them smart questions when they're holding hearings instead of stupid questions, and can also help to forge the legislation. So the other damage that Gingrich did to the Congress and to America was he absolutely cut their level of resident expertise by cutting their staff, particularly when it came to their technical staff, who are committee staff members who actually understand how sectors work, how technology works, and whatever. So in another answer to your really, really astute question, we would need to fix that and regenerate Congress's internal expertise by bringing in really good staffers, PhDs and coders and guys who really understand the system, which again would be very easy to do, because all you would need to do is pick up the phone to Mark Zuckerberg or to Sundar Pichai or any of the CEOs and say, look, we'd like to borrow some of your experts, some of your fellows, some of your smartest people to come work for the Congress for 2 or 3 years to train our in-house people so that they really understand how this technology works, so we can think about smart ways to legislate it and regulate it rather than just sort of hippie punching average people who are walking by without any concept of what it is that they're doing, thereby either accomplishing nothing or damaging a very important sector that, by the way, is more important than ever now that President Xi in China, he's an engineer, and he has China on a track to run rings around America's technology sector. They are now turning out between 5 and 10 times as many engineers per year as the United States is. The United States has cut off its access to first-class engineers through really idiotic anti-immigration policies. Microsoft needs 6,000 PhD engineers that they've been trying to bring in from the United States grads for 10 years. They can't get enough Americans to take these jobs. They know exactly where they can get these jobs from, people like from places like India and China, and we won't let them do it. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot in terms of our technology policy across the board, all of which is fixable, but nobody on Capitol Hill and nobody in the White House, so far as I can tell, has taken a thoughtful approach to this. So thank you for a really good question. Bill, do you want to...
With respect to the...
compliment me on the excellence of my answer.
Yeah, overall excellent, but I will say on the engineer question, I don't want a bunch of engineers that are cleared by the Chi-Coms to come over here and spy for them. I would rather have Indians who are awesome and are very smart. But the core issue as to why we are not graduating engineers is also something that has to be looked into. We're so busy creating classes for, basket weaving social justice 101 rather than focusing on actual academic studies that produce actual engineers and professionals. Oh, and also we encumber our education system with so much superfluous garbage that it takes us so long and so much effort to produce engineers who have to go through so much crap that has nothing to do with engineering. Whereas other countries that produce all these engineers that you're so proud of do not encumber their students with garbage that has nothing to do with engineering. So we have fundamental problems with our education system that would have to be addressed in order for us to produce, and I believe we can produce enough engineers. But other than that, I agree with everything.
Well, it sounds like part of the issue is because tech has a learning curve. Instead of being able to explain to a congressman what fracking is in 20 minutes and what needs to be regulated, it might take 70 minutes, and also someone with a really specialized skill set. So thank you for that insight. I hope that we fix the issue so that we can regulate the tech companies without stopping them from being able to do the important things that they're doing, but both for the economy and our prominence in the world, but also these are useful tools. They just need to be reined in, I think.
They don't need to be reined in, and they don't need to be reined on. But you're absolutely right, Michael, from Portland, that the federal government of the United States is a scandal in terms of its in terms of its ignorance of how tech works. And if they don't up their game, and by the way, there are some great agencies like the National Institute of Standards and Technology that also take care of things like measuring the keeping the inch and the ounce sacrosanct in terms of its quality. But since the Congress, that's boring, you know, they find that there are very few engineers in Congress, and unless Congress, which is the nerve center, not the Senate, the House of Representatives, just, you know, gets serious about this and comes to Albert Einstein, that is, then pretty soon America is going to become a second-rate technology power, a second-rate economic power, and we're going to be having our smartest young people going to China to college instead of the Chinese fighting to get into the United States. It's a national, it's a slowly blossoming national tragedy, and I hope that President Biden and Vice President Harris will do something about it.
I'm sure that Trump in his second term will.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not till 2024, Bill. I don't know if we can wait that long.
Anyway, I know with UN Ambassador Pete Buttigieg, that will never happen. We will maintain our global prominence as tech leaders, but hopefully they will figure out how to do some good regulation, because whether they need to be reined in or not, they do need to be regulated.
Wow.
I think the idea of good regulations...
I feel like you just threw Ambassador Bolton under the bus on that one.
I think good regulations is an oxymoron, Michael, but God bless you. I hope it's true.
We do have a caller from South Carolina. Thank you, Michael. You're awesome, as always.
From All South right, Carolina? You're awesome.
Yeah, Colton.
Good night.
All right. Hey, Palmetto.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah. Awesome. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you. I hear you. I had a question, kind of wanted to take a kind of piggyback off the last question. You guys brought up like the brain drain on Capitol Hill. And I used to work on Capitol Hill, and I very much understand this, that the combination of low pay, stress, and a whole lot of other issues that go into the lives of Hill staffers that are, I would say, very intelligent people that just get absolutely demolished and want to get out there as quickly as possible. So I appreciate the fact that there is a discussion going around that Capitol Hill needs people that needs to have more intelligent people and probably reverse some of the stuff that Newt Gingrich did, have more intelligent people on committees, and then also do more to try and boost the benefits of working on and serving a country on the Hill from a intelligence side. But when I worked there, one of the issues that we were really trying to wrap our heads around was the beginning of the real explosion of Bitcoin, when Bitcoin got up around $20,000 or something like that per coin. And I remember hearing so much that when you hear grandparents start talking about buying Bitcoin, that it was the end of Bitcoin. And then, of course, that was followed by the fall. So I'm just curious, you know, that was about 2017. Now, a few years later, we're seeing Bitcoin really rising very rapidly again. And so I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on A, what's the cause of this sudden increase in Bitcoin, and if that's, you know, the tide that raises all ships. So what's causing that recent rise? And then kind of where do you see the blockchain in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I actually happen to know the answer to that, but Bill thinks he knows the answer to that. So
actually, I know that you know the answer to that. This is actually, you know, this is a great show, Ralph, because normally I get all these questions, but this is yet another question that is squarely in your bailiwick. And go.
Okay, right now Bitcoin is at $16,822.30, That's up from about 11,000 in early October, and it is definitely on a tear. So, Colton, let me let you in on one of the deepest, darkest secrets in economics. Are you sitting down? Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I hope our listeners are ready for this, because this is secret insidery stuff. The price of everything, everywhere, at all times, with very trivial, non-material exceptions, is determined by supply and demand.
Groundbreaking stuff.
I know. I think this might have been Q classified, but I'm revealing it to the world. The price of Bitcoin has gone up because the demand has increased, or the supply has reduced. There you go. And as long as that continues to happen, as long as demand increases while supply stays the same or gets reduced, the price of Bitcoin will continue to go up. And if that reverses, so demand goes down and or supply goes up, then the price of Bitcoin will go down. Now, here's the tricky thing. Nobody knows whether the demand for Bitcoin is going to go up or down, and nobody knows whether whether the supply of Bitcoin is going to go up or down. There is a whole lot of Bitcoins out there that are held by people who are colloquially called whales. These are people who own, they're only 21 million Bitcoins that can ever be in existence, but there are some people who own a lot of Bitcoin. Nobody knows who they are. Nobody knows how much they own, but it's a lot. If one of these whales decided to drop 1 million Bitcoins into the market immediately, then the price of Bitcoin would crater. So, will they? Well, they don't want the price of Bitcoin to crater, because they own a lot of Bitcoins, and so if they dump a lot of Bitcoins on the market all at once, then they will, on paper, lose a lot of money. But still, it could happen. The other thing is that every Bitcoin is divisible into 1 million Satoshis, and so the thing that you can do with a Bitcoin is you can create a distributed ledger, meaning you can use a Bitcoin to create 5,000, 10,000 a record on 1 or 5 or 10,000 computers of the same data. But what a lot of people are not aware of is you can do the exact same thing with one Satoshi. So in terms of what you can actually do with a distributed ledger, you can actually do with a Bitcoin. It's not like there are only 21 million of them, minus the ones got dumped in landfills or lost in very other ways, minus the ones that have not yet been minted or mined. The fact is that you have to multiply that, 15, 16, 17, 18 million Bitcoins out there by another million to get the number of Satoshis. So in terms of functionality, there is functionally an infinite amount of Bitcoin. So when people start to think about Bitcoin in terms of utility, like copper or steel or silver, meaning that you can actually use it to build stuff with, when people start thinking about it in terms of utility, rather than as a speculative asset that they want to own based upon the greater fool theory that someone's going to pay them more than they paid for it, then the supply of Bitcoin is fundamentally infinite. And that is not good for the price. So the last thing I want to say about whether it'll go, where the price of Bitcoin is going to go up or down, anybody who claims to know that is lying. And the way you know they're lying is, if they really knew that, they would be out there in total secrecy buying or, as the case may be, selling Bitcoin. They would not be yakking about it, because if they really knew if the price was going to go up, they would be buying it before the price went up and then selling it when the price peaked. And then when the price went down again, they'd be buying more. And they would be making gobs, I think is the technical word here, of money, which is even more fun than going on WGXC and expressing their opinion about things. So the answer to whether Bitcoin is going to go up or down in value, nobody knows. If they knew, they wouldn't be telling. So, Holton, does that answer your question?
That does. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thank you for calling in. We hope you'll call again next week or in the near future.
Absolutely.
That was actually quite fascinating, and I actually learned. I did not realize the thing about the Satoshis. What the heck is that?
Satoshi is a divisible 1/1,000,000th of a Bitcoin. And of course, it's named in honor of, in homage to
himself, right? I know that.
Inventor of Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, who name that really wasn't. It was a pseudonym, and nobody knows who Satoshi Nakamoto was, except for Craig Wright says he was Satoshi Nakamoto, and George Gilder thinks that Craig Wright might actually have been the Satoshi Nakamoto. It's one of those sweet mysteries of life that I don't expect us to ever find out a reliable answer to.
Very good answer. Very good. You know, obviously you are Mr. Blockchain, and folks, if you're listening to the show, I usually answer a lot of the tech things about, you know, why does Apple suck? And Ralph is
a value judgment and not a tech thing, if I may point out.
I was just being honest.
The tech deficient.
I don't care about your feelings, Baco.
The tech deficient, like some people I could mention, often confuse their value judgments with truth. Caller.
Farouk in Raleigh. Our good friend Farouk.
Good. Welcome back, Farouk.
How are you?
We are better than we deserve, but that is setting a very low bar, Farouk.
Now, I really need your help tonight. So this is perhaps the most important call that I've ever made to you.
Well, then you better ask me and not Bill. But
okay,
let's find out what the issue is here.
All right. So you don't know this obviously about me, but I am engaged to be married to an amazing young lady, and we are very excited about our future. However, she is a avid Alexa user, and I am petrified about what the Alexa ramifications are. I do have a little bit of a conspiracy theorist in me that makes me believe that there's a lot of information, perhaps recordings, unauthorized access to our household information that could be lost through the Alexa devices. What is hype? What is real? And whether our household will be safe if we had an Alexa in it versus not having one?
Actually, that is a question that Bill Collier might actually have an accurate answer to.
Correct. Yeah. So I would love to put your mind at ease completely and 100%. There are so many credible reports. Consumer Watchdog as one of them, about allegations that Alexa, Google, etc. are spying on you. I do believe that there's enough smoke that possibly there's a bit of a fire. But I also believe that they're not spying on you to find out your PIN code and break into your account or find out if you're guilty of wrong, speak against the government. They're looking for keywords and buzzwords to serve you ads. It's pretty much the extent of what they're after. In order for them to program into that device, to, quote, spy on you and find anything other than a couple keywords takes a tremendous amount of programming, and with millions of users, they don't probably have enough server volume and bandwidth in order to actually do anything other than catch those random keywords and use that to serve you ads. I think that's literally the only thing you'll ever get out of them is an ad that's like, hey, we were just talking about that. Now we're just talking about puppies, and now there's a puppy ad. The government, if the government is going to spy on you, they don't need Alexa. They have other ways of spying on you. So as far as if you're trying to avoid the government spying on you, well, that horse left the barn a long time ago. But if you're worried about Alexa,
Bill, if I may, the government doesn't spy on us. It protects us.
Yes, I know.
It looks out after us. Okay.
I stand.
Spy is such a freighted word.
Brothers and sisters in arms.
Exactly. They're just protecting us.
Yeah.
The bad guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
But that does set my mind at ease.
Baruch, this is Ralph. I'm going to turn this back to practicality rather than paranoid fantasies. Although I must admit, Bill's paranoid fantasies are far more amusing than my practicalities. What a lot of people fail to remember, because it's so basic that it's easy to overlook, Amazon and Facebook and Google, these are companies. They're commercial enterprises. All they care about doing is giving their users a great user experience and making money by virtue of doing that. Since they don't charge you for the use of their services, the way they make money is by learning as much as they can about their audience. Just the same way the TV shows do, the TV networks do. They're called ratings. They have Nielsen ratings. And what big data does is they find out as much as they can about their audience in the aggregate, not you personally. There's no money to be made in learning all your secrets or any of your secrets. That's not interesting to them because there's absolutely no money to be made there. But if they can take the 200 million people who use their service on any given day, and then break them up into age and gender and interests. Are they interested in sports? Or are they interested in opera? Are they interested in puppies like Bill Collier? Are they interested in tanks like Bill Collier? Are they interested in collecting antique helmets like Bill Collier? Then the people who want to sell tanks will advertise to Bill Collier and the other 40,000 people who are tank enthusiasts. They won't waste their money advertising to me because I'm not interested in tanks.
Hold on, you're not interested in tanks?
No, I'm not. Or antique war helmets or whatever. So you are part of what's called a demographic. They want to know about your interests and your desires so they can sell ads to people who want to advertise to you about things that you are interested in. And there's no money to be made about spying on you. This is like Nielsen ratings on steroids, because they get to know more specifics about their audience. And that makes you that information makes the ads that their advertisers like Ford or Apple or Donald Trump. They want to know who to advertise to.
Okay, Banco, we have a one-minute warning.
And therefore, they're not spying on you because there's no money to be made in that. Farouk, does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you so much. That clears the air for me, and I think the marriage will continue, or you will continue on the marriage.
Farouk, the bottom line is Alexa is not going to use your secrets against you. She's just going to sell you stuff.
Got it.
She's not going to sell you stuff. She's going to tell people, tell your friends to sell stuff to you.
Well, she tries to sell me directly. I mean, I have a good relationship with her.
I know, but don't tell Dora, okay?
All right. No, she'd be very jealous.
Right. Well, thank you, everybody, and come and we appreciate the calls. We appreciate the listeners. Call back next week for more Tech Talk.
Yes, we'll be live on the air next week. We will probably have another TikTok update and other fabulous updates that you didn't even see coming in your wildest dreams.